Welcome to the Enterprise Systems Podcast. I'm James E. Powell, Editorial Director for ES, and your host for this program. SOA is one of the most popular technologies to come along in a while, but it brings a number of challenges, especially for developers. Before you jump in with both feet, we offer advice from Jerry Smith, Chief Technology Officer of Symphony Services, a global outsourcing firm that specializes in product development and engineering services. Symphony's customers include Hyperion, Oracle, Yahoo, and Google. Among the topics we discuss, what's driving SOA's adoption and how developing for the technology is different from traditional development. Jerry also offers some best practices you can use to build your SOA applications.
Hello, Jerry, and welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me today.
I'd like to start with your definition and your perspective of what SOA is and what's driving its adoption.
SOA is one of many architectures that are out there. It happens to stand for service-oriented architecture, and it's just a way of looking at building enterprise systems based on services. A lot of people don't know that it's one of many. I mean, you have object-oriented architectures and resource-oriented architectures and message-oriented architectures, and SOA is just the next and a natural evolution of these paradigms building on each other that focuses on the service, the contractual boundary between the back-end systems and what the end user wants as a way to build, you know, highly flexible and agile systems. Some of the things that I think are driving the adoption of SOA over the last few years is clearly the desire to build more agile and flexible systems as a function of the ongoing changes in business dynamics. We've all been in this business for a long time, starting back from early days of the Corba experiment, where we were trying to build distributed systems based on objects. And God knows it took a lot to marshal data between those systems. As business drivers changed, the rigidity of those early distributed systems were so strong that the applications that result from them broke as a natural process. Through messaging, Java messaging services, messaging orientation, better object-oriented technology, we've finally migrated to a point, especially with the advent of XML, to a spot where services can be defined and discovered and utilized by third-party parties to implement pretty interesting and very complex systems that enable back-end systems to change while the front-end services to remain. So from most of our customers' perspective, we're really looking at how do they build systems that will enable them to change as a function of the business changes and keep technology out of that picture. So I think agility and flexibility are the key drivers today.
What are some of the more interesting applications of SOA that you've seen?
So the ones that we're working, on today are really workflow oriented. So SOA's kind of going through that second generation of development. You had basic services, where people would define services using the web services description language. They'd make them discoverable. People would connect two or three services together to produce a product. That was pretty cool. It was a static, version one of SOA was very static in nature. Version 2.0 of SOA is very dynamic in nature, and the key thing that I think folks will recognize is the advent of Beeple, the business process execution language, and don't laugh at this, but Beeple for people, the business process execution language that incorporates people as a dynamic entity. So the current applications that are interesting to me and our clients are ones that are dynamic in nature. For example, if you think about the orchestration and the movement of money that goes between ATMs, banks, and Federal Reserves, that sort of heavily regulated environment, high transaction, financially oriented, is not an environment that lends itself to rigid, non-flexible architectures, even though we've implemented successfully them in COBOL and mainframe systems. Today, however, as we're starting to see more and more changes occur, people are looking to say, how can we address this with a more modern architecture? SOA and Beeple, bringing the dynamics to that, allows us now to really inject a workflow into a distributed service environment. So anytime you're dealing with highly workflow-oriented modular components that need to be orchestrated and are driven by regulations, other external governance processes, those seem to be very interesting to major corporations.
Symphony Services is an application developer, correct?
They're a commercial grade product developer.
Okay, so let's talk about development and SOA. Let's start with maybe what you see as the traditional development paradigm that, you know, we're all familiar with in the last 20 or 30 years, and then how is SOA changing that?
Yeah, so if you look at it today, there are a number of different paradigms out there, right? Structure analysis, structure design, you have object-oriented, iterative and incremental, you have RUP, you have Agile, you have a number of different views out of it. At the end of the day, most of these views really center around the implementation in an enterprise system on the foundation of data assets. And that's an okay thing. At the bare bottom layer, you'll have exercises that are designed to elicit requirements from end user. Typically, those requirements describe the transformation of some data entity in the process. And business processes are defined. They're often implemented in either a COBOL program, a Java module, or a Visual Basic script. And then at the end of the day, the real core assets, the things that you can put your mind around, measure, and ascribe value to, sit in a database, and their data. So when we look at the development methodologies, really everything is driving to a handful of code, massaging and modifying data elements. When you look at SOAS, a service orientation to this, you're still going to have that deep desire to persist data elements. But really what you're looking to do now is to say, what are the service elements of it? So the process, while the methodologies are the same, iterative incremental, spiral, structural analysis design, the artifacts are now driving to a much higher level. It's that meta layer. So it's the description of the data through service interfaces. In order to successfully implement a SOA architecture, you need to be able to describe the services using the web services description languages. That standard enables other people to hunt for it, understand what your service does, subscribe to it, and utilize it. Think of it as the telephone directory entry that you would look up a pizza parlor, for example. So when we're developing SOA architectures, it's very, very important, in addition to doing all the stuff that we normally do in terms of requirements analysis and design and coding and testing, it's important to keep in mind that our end deliverable is a set of well-defined, very discoverable, very well-behaving and reliable services that are out there. One side element to this is, if you think about the traditional development as delivering an application, that is then implemented by an IT shop. In the SOA world, we're really developing a service which is going to be implemented by your own shop. So in addition to developing code, you also have to develop the operational aspects around it. So a developer today, while they may be interested in the well-behaving Java program, the developer under a SOA environment is actually saying, you know what, I have to make this survivable and reliable and discoverable and well-behaved. So that's an important aspect of it, which then kind of leads into some of the differences, right, that one has in the next generation development.
From a developer's perspective, isn't working with SOA a little bit tricky? I mean, you talked about a service builder has to make something reliable, you know, dependable. But if I'm out there testing, I'm testing in an environment over which I have no control now.
What a great observation. I mean, absolutely. It's easy to test code. I mean, a lot of people would find that amusing and say, oh, no, Dr. Smith, that's not very easy at all. And I would say, yeah, you're right. But relative to services, it's very easy. And I often bring the analogy in, and you know, hopefully I won't bore too many people with this, but if you think about having three services work together, you have roughly about six different ways to test the interactions between there. And it's a function of a function of me talking to you, you talking to me talking to a second person, them talking to us, and then the both of you talking together. There's primarily six different ways. As you grow the number of services that are out there, that growth in testing grows exponentially. So if I have 100 services working in an orchestrated fashion around providing financial services you have a 2 to the 100th different interactions that are necessary to provide 100% testing. Now, we can't do that today. So service orientation in and of itself is more complex because of the nature of having to test in an environment where you don't control the services that are going to be part of the overall application you have. So in addition to developing the stuff, which is going to be hard to begin with, which means it's service-oriented, you have to test in this space. And we see that as the key challenge that limits the growth of reliable systems in the future. It's easy for me to say my system is going to behave like you think it's going to behave most of the time. But if you think about how these new technologies migrate their way into critical systems, would we ever implement a SOA architecture as we know it today on an airplane? Well, of course not. Why? Because in order to implement those kind of technologies in those kind of critical systems, they have to be very what's called deterministic. That is, every time you put a 1 in, you get a 2 out. You put a 2 in, you get a 4 out. You know every state of the system. SOA environments today, service-oriented environments today, are very non-deterministic. They're very stochastic in nature, and that's because we don't control all the different elements. So when we look today at the key challenges in implementing or developing SOA environments, we really see the key challenges around ensuring that the systems are well-behaved and being able to test for that behavior in the context of the services that we're providing to our end users.
We mentioned an airline example. I'm curious to know what kinds of applications SOA is suitable for, what isn't it suitable for, where should it be used, and where should we just say, hey, traditional development works for us?
Yeah, you know, that's I think that's an ongoing area of research. I mean, with any new emergent technology that's being successfully adopted by that early adopter, early majority space, practitioners begin to wrestle with that question. I think it's often easier to say what's not appropriate than what is appropriate, but I see several characteristics that are beginning to emerge as indicators of a good target for SOA environment. You know, first is that you're able to chunk the operation into well-defined services. If you can't define the services that you're going to implement, then there's no reason to have a service-oriented architecture. That's almost a dust kind of statement. But a lot of people struggle to carve out of their application well-defined services. So that's the first indication. The second indication I look for is the amount of work required to orchestrate or to bring together those services. Is that work proportionally smaller than the work that you're actually doing? And this is the case we look for. You know, if it takes me a lot more time to set up the podcast and get everybody ready for it and get everybody online, and the podcast session itself is only 1 minute long, then why do it, right? Why not go to some other medium? And the same is for SOA. A lot of people are trying to force fit lots of fine-grained applications into a spot where the amount of time it takes to orchestrate the solution is much, much larger than the time you're actually taking to process that solution yourself. And that's a force fit in that area. And then the last area is you want an application where you can benefit from parallel activities, right? So if I have a serial set of services, that is, I take a service A and then I go to service B and service C and service D, and they're all in the same organization and they're all one after another, the orchestration of that really doesn't make sense to me. What we were looking for these days is to be able to parallel our activities, to be able to break out those services, do a function in one namespace, in one processing environment, a function in another processing environment, adding value to itself and bring those things together. So, you know, I see being able to define the service clearly, being able to make sure that the level of orchestration is proportionally less than the value you're getting out of the services, and being able to parallelize the amount of work that you're doing in there as three kind of good indicators that you have a good targeted environment. My counsel to folks, and especially when I'm acting as a chief architect on a team, is not to go overboard with service orientation. I saw one environment where a group of people tried to service orient a map, a mapping process, where every element on a map was a service which became part of a service orientation. So if you picture a 1024 by 768 grid environment, and each of those points was a service, and each service, hence object, and that's what they were trying to derive from, each service was part of an orchestration. You have literally thousands of objects which are being orchestrated together. The performance required to communicate and orchestrate that brought the system down. And that was a good example of what not to do, you know, in a process.
Right.
And by the way, we laugh at that, right? But at the time, these people had a great business case for it. They saw it. They saw the benefit. Each of these would be a service. Each element would represent a grid within a specific geographical boundary that was coupled to sensors in the field. So each all the sensors would bring information in and fuse it there. The map would be a service fusion of all these data. And you look at it and you go, wow, this is going to be the coolest thing since sliced bread. But then when you go to implement the orchestration processes, that's where you get into lots of trouble in these environments.
Well, we're almost out of time here. I'd like to close with your thoughts on, from a development point of view, what are some of the best practices people should follow when looking at SOA?
I am up to about 47 pages of bullet-pointed best practices. And I think in the SOA world, because it is an emerging technology, it's going to keep growing and eventually consolidate down. We saw the same thing with object technology and messaging technology. The one piece that I do focus on a lot, and I encourage everybody to develop SOA to focus on a lot, is in the area of governance. SOA is being adopted because it's providing business value, agility, flexibility, you know, and then all the classic time to market, lower costs, et cetera. Without strong governance, without tying the business value case to the development and delivery of services and measuring, monitoring, and reporting, and then ultimately taking action on those to change the way either those services are being implemented, dropping the ones that don't work, adding new ones that do work, reorchestrating the environment. Without a strong governance process around that, we'll end up in a alphabet soup of services that will make COBOL spaghetti code look very appetizing as a dinner. Because of the nature of the way services work together, and the notion that I talked about before, in you know, being able to orchestrate thousands of objects. So I would encourage practitioners to focus a lot not only on the development, not only making sure that we have the right tools and technology and well-formed services and all those wonderful things that you have, and there are great best practices that are in there, but focus disproportionately for now on developing strong governance practices that tie the business value into the commercial delivery of the services you have, so that as you go up the service-oriented maturity model level and you move from an ad hoc level into a repeatable level and you're defining how you're doing this, and then eventually you get into a managed level, you can actually take advantage of that fifth level, that optimization level, where you're changing the way your businesses are developing services as a function of the value that we promised to our business partners that they're paying for.
Well, Jerry, thank you very much for your time and your insight.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me today and look forward to talking with you and others in the future.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Symphony Services, visit their website at symphonyservices.com. For additional news and analysis about SOA and SOA-related products, check out the Enterprise section of our homepage at esj.com. And be sure to check the Enterprise Strategies newsletter, the RSS feed, or the ESJ homepage for information about previous podcasts you may have missed.